This episode of Caribbean Mystics is brought to you by Sage Sanctuary. This one-of-a-kind metaphysical shop is located on St. Thomas in the Yacht Haven Grand Shopping Plaza. They offer a unique collection of esoteric books, tarot and oracle decks, crystals, incense, apothecary herbs, and mystical resources to support the exploration of the sacred self. The sanctuary is home to multiple mediums, channels, and gifted psychics offering a glimpse into the seen and unseen. Akashic record readings, tarot readings, aura photography, dream interpretation, astrology sessions, various modalities of Reiki, energy healing, and more. Additionally, the sanctuary hosts a community calendar of magical events, including weekly and monthly hands-on workshops, expert lectures, guided meditations, sound baths, certification classes, and more. Make sure to call Sage Sanctuary today at 340-775-7253 or visit their website at sagesanctuary.com. That's Sage, S-A-J-E, sanctuary.com. This episode of Caribbean Mystics is brought to you by Alexandra Marie Photography for all your life moments. Raw and authentic captures in the unique landscapes of the Virgin Islands. She specializes in weddings, proposals, events, maternity, senior portraits, and family portraits. And the great thing about it is she offers a local discount of $50 off and wedding packages and loyalty discounts for returning clients. She's available to shoot on St. Thomas, St. John, and Water Island. Alexandra Marie Photography. Call 340-690-2062 to book your next shoot or check her website at alexandramariephotography.zenfolio.com.
Welcome to Caribbean Mystics Podcast,
where we marry mysticism, superstition, and lore. I'm your host, Paulina.
And I'm your host, Gabrielle. And we are your resident Caribbean mystics.
Join us today as we explore the depths of real supernatural stories
told by real people located right in our very own backyard. Today's twisted tale illuminates three stories from two Caribbean islands. Our storyteller begins today's episode recounting her mother's childhood experience in Grenada, and her final story is a personal account that occurred on the island of Tortola, of an event that haunts her to this day. What would you do if you came face to face with indescribable darkness?
My mother, as a child, used to enjoy going out in the front yard or sometimes in the backyard, playing with the school children around the area. She had a friend, for lack of me knowing her name, let's just call her Susie, who used to come and play with her in her backyard. And where my mother used to live in Grenada in St. George's, the backyard used to have like an open space, and then it goes right into the mountains and then into the trees and then into the mountains going up into the hill. One day my mother said that her and Susie were in the backyard and they were playing with their dolls, and my grandmother yelled out to my mother, "Aye, it's time to come inside, it's getting late out." So my mother said she told Susie, "You know, I have to go inside." And Susie said, "Okay, no problem. Well, I'm going home, I guess I'll see you tomorrow." And she farewelled my mom and she walked away. My mother said she was cleaning up the toys in the yard, picking up her dollies and stuff like that off of the floor, and getting everything together, and she could hear Susie calling her name from the bush, from in the trees, calling her name, "Jen, Jen." And my mother kept saying, "Susie, is that you?" She said, "Yeah, come in the bush, come, I need to show you something." And my mother said she started to approach the bush because she was hearing her friend and wanted to know why she was there in the bush and why she was calling her there. My mother said as she started to approach the bush, the voice started to go down and she couldn't hear it anymore. She kept on saying, "Susie, where are you? Where are you?" And she kept on saying, "Come farther back, come farther back." My mother kept on walking back, and then my grandmother yelled out, "Jen, what are you doing back there?" My mother told my grandmother, "Mommy, I just making sure Susie getting home because she was here in the bush just now calling my name." And my grandmother stops my mom and says, "Susie? What do you mean, Susie?" "Susie just called from up the road and saying that she's home, and she's, her mother said that she's about to get in the bathtub to take a bath." So who was calling my mother in the bush? Who was imitating Susie's voice in the bush, calling my mother's bush? And had she gone into the bush or into the trees, what would have happened to my mother that day? We will never know. My mom came home from school one day. There was a big veranda wrapped around the entire house, and there was windows that was pointing from the kitchen. One was pointing, I think, from the living room area, just around the veranda. It was a very big house my grandmother had in St. George's. She got inside, and it was just her. Her other sibling had not reached home yet, my aunt. My mother went inside, and she said it began to rain. She sat down, you know, wondered what chores she had to do and what was going on and whatnot. And through the rain, my mother said she could hear footsteps on the veranda. That sounded quite weird. So she said she got up to look to see what was going on, if there was somebody on the veranda. She went to the front porch area first, where the first window is by the front door, and couldn't see anything, but saw a shadow just moving, as though she's just almost missing it, going to the window. She went to the kitchen one and saw the same thing, just a little movement and almost like a black cloak on the floor, just dragging. So my mother was like, "Hello, Dawn, is that you?" You know, calling out to her sister, thinking it's her sibling, or calling out mommy, thinking that it's, you know, her mother, my grandmother. And nobody answered back. So my mother said she just went and she sat on the couch, started her homework. About maybe 10 minutes later, the rain stopped, and my grandmother followed right after and walked in the house. And my mother said to her, "Mommy, I would have sworn somebody was on the porch, was on the veranda." And my mother said she walked outside to see one hoof print and one human footprint on the floor. Almost like a pattern, like it was wet on the floor, walking around the veranda. And my mother said as a child, it terrified her because she wondered who it was. So she reached and she called out to my grandmother, "Mommy, mommy, come out here." And calm as day, grandmother said to her, "Oh, that's probably just Laja Bless, a.k.a. Cowfoot Woman, getting shelter from the rain. She said, if you don't bother her, she ain't gonna bother you." And my mother said she was terrified as a child that my grandmother was so calm about it. Because, I mean, old people back in the day, you know, old Caribbean folk back in the day, they always say the same thing. If you don't bother them, they ain't gonna bother you. Just leave them alone. Go about your business. And so she was so used to it. You know, spirits and jumbie and them kind of thing was normal for my grandmother. So she just told my mother, "It's okay. She didn't trouble you. You didn't trouble her. She went about her business. She just wanted some shelter from the rain." So it's just weird to think that my mother saw something like that. And as a child, like I said, seeing a hoof print and a human footprint, a bare foot, like not even a shoe, a footprint, that would freak you out. Quite honestly, that would freak out anybody. It sure did freak me out as a child when my mother first told me. So for this next segment, I will be talking about my very own experience. And this one here took place on Tortola, British Virgin Islands. These experiences of my own, I still really get traumatized by it, even speaking about it now. But this happened to me when I was maybe about 8 years old. I was probably the same age as my mother when she had that incident with her and Susie. Growing up in Lower Estate, you know, there were people around the neighborhood who had always told us about different stuff. You see Jumbi, you could see Cowfoot Woman, you could see all kind of different things. You could see, Voodoo Man and all kind of different things moving through the night. And, coming home after hearing all those stories, when my grandmother used to say, make sure I in the house before the street light them turn on. We come home, my grandmother used to tell us, when we go to bed at night, make sure you say your prayers. Make sure you pee before you go in your bed, because she don't want us having to get up in the middle of the night for any reason whatsoever. And this specific night here, I just had to go. I didn't listen. I was probably tired. Probably weren't listening. And I went to the bathroom. And the way that our house was set up, it was a two-bedroom apartment. We had the master bedroom in which my grandmother, my grandfather stayed. Then we had the room way down the hallway that me, my brother, my two aunts stayed in. Me and my brother slept on that top bunk because at the time he was 9 and I was maybe about 7 or 8. And my aunt was on the lower one, and then there was another twin bed that was right off to the side that my other aunt slept in. And then my other aunt, because there was no more rooms and she didn't want to cluster the room anymore, used to sleep in the living room on the little pull-out sofa that we had in the house in Lower Estate. And one night, I had to go to the bathroom. As much as I thought in my head, all the things that my grandmother told me about, stop getting up in the middle of the night, go and sleep, when rest call you, go sleep, stop getting up for, But I had to pee. So I got up to use the restroom. And I went and I flushed the toilet, washed my hand and everything. And the night I walked down the hallway, I could see the refrigerator light, so that's what made me walk down the hall, thinking that it was my aunt maybe getting up to get some water or something, not sure why the refrigerator light would be on and why the door is open. So I head down the hallway, wondering, if it's my aunt calling out to her, Auntie, is that you? No sound at all, just hearing the fridge door kind of creak, hearing it. And I was like, well, why is the fridge door open? From behind the fridge door comes a big dark figure. A big dark figure. And it just comes from behind the door. And I could just see the red, small, red beady eyes. Two up, high as ever. And I was looking at it and it was looking at me. I was maybe about 10 feet away from it. Because I didn't know what was going on. I was scared. But I remember my grandmother always used to tell me, when you encounter certain things, you say the Lord's Prayer. You say it out loud and you mean it. Close your eyes and say it. So as this thing started to swoon towards me with its, it was like moving, like it had arms, like it was swooning back and forth. And it was moving and like sliding across the floor coming towards me. I closed my eyes and I began to say it out loud, and the tears rolled down my face because I was so scared. As I finished at the end of the prayer, I opened my eyes and it was gone. So me being the 7-8 year old that I am terrified. I take off running back down the hallway to the room, getting back up on the bunk bed, shaking my brother, telling my brother, I just see something. He telling me, go to sleep, man, go to sleep. It's like you ain't seen nothing, relax, go to sleep. Me and sleep that night was incompatible. I couldn't go back to sleep. All I could see was that image in my head of what I had just saw. And for a while, I tried to tell my brother and he just did not believe me. He did not want to believe me. I didn't say anything to my grandmother because I'm pretty sure she would have been very upset at me knowing that I got up in the middle of the night after she told me, stop getting up to go gallivant. And I was like, I just had to pee, but I didn't say anything. About a month or so had gone by, maybe a little longer than that, had gone by. And once again, I went to bed, had to pee again. I sat in that bed and I crossed my legs. I screamed, I squall, I torn. I didn't want to get up to use the bathroom because I was terrified of what I might see. I almost thought about piecing myself in the bed and dealing with the consequences later on in the morning when my grandmother got up. But I couldn't hold it anymore. I tried to wake my brother and I begged him. I said, please, I don't want to go by myself. Can you please go with me to the restroom? I need to go to the bathroom, please. You know, reluctantly, he was really upset. Ugh, you need to use the bathroom, whatever. But he got up. We got walked down the stairs for the bunk bed and we went to the bathroom. It's a long corridor down the way that you would walk through. And I was tinkling. I was using the bathroom. And my brother keep telling me, hurry up. I'm sleepy. I want to sleep. So I'm peeping. I'm like, I hurry in. And I just remember as I wiped and I stand up, I just hear my brother say my name. And he said, what is that? As he pointed down the hallway. And as I looked down the hallway, the same figure I saw a month and a half ago, maybe or so, was down the hallway, staring at us both. We were so scared as it started to try to come towards us again, swooning from side to side, swooning across the floor, hands up, moving high. And all I could think of was what my grandmother said, and I told my brother, close your eyes. And I grabbed his hand and I squeezed and I said, say the Lord's Prayer. And as we started to say the Lord's Prayer out loud, we squeezed each other's hands tight and I told him, don't open your eyes, just say the prayer. And we continued to pray. We continued to pray. As we opened our eyes at the end of the prayer, it was gone again. As I looked over at my brother, his eyes were filled with water. And from that day forward, my brother had never doubted anything that I had told him after that. Because for once, he had saw it for himself. Now, as we got up the next morning, of course, now we feel like we both must say something to our grandmother. And we told her, Granny, we got up in the middle of the night and we saw something. And she said, I tell her, it's your end, stop getting up at night. And we told her what it was. And she said, yeah, it was just a jumbi. They move during the night when they feel like solace, like nobody's there or nobody's up or moving or whatever. And the reason why there was one that was so close was because the next yard or so over from us, there was an old voodoo man who used to do black magic and black stuff in his backyard. And we used to sometimes see it. He would be doing all kind of stuff over the fire and chanting. And there was nights we would see him with his eyes running back in his head. And my grandmother used to always say, stop watching him. Stop staring at him. Don't look at him. Stop looking over the yard. But it looks like he had a lot of troubled spirits that he used to release at nighttime to go and roam. And I always just asked my grandmother, Mommy, well, Mommy, why he don't mess with us? Because she said, a lot of the times, they don't want to mess with pure souls. They want to mess with people who are troubled, whose souls are broken or whose spirits are broken. She said, I, as young, innocent children, happy, healthy, they ain't trying trouble. They want the troubled ones. So she said they might enter in here, but they ain't gonna trouble you. From then, she used to always make sure she put salt in front of the door. And I remember her going around the house with her anointed oil and anointing every doorpost, every window, every window post, everything. She was anointing it with the oil and praying over it. And she put the salt in the front door and the back door. And from that time on, in that house, I had never seen anything else after that. So I'm thankful for my grandmother knowing what she knew and was able to, you know, help us have a peace of mind as we went to bed each night. And she was able to keep those things out. And every time we used to come in and out the house, especially after 9 o'clock, she used to tell us, walk in backwards, please. Turn your back to the door and walk in backwards. And that is how we kept them out and kept our, you know, peace in. So
hello, everybody. Welcome to the Caribbean Mystics Podcast. This is episode 1. So excited. I'm your host, Paulina.
And I'm your host, Gabrielle. And we are very grateful to all of you who decided to show up on episode number 1. And we are hope that you are here for a good time and a long time.
We have been working hard on this project for about a year. So yes, thank you for listening. And we have such an amazing first story for you. It has so much folklore and legend and history and scariness all packed in one great episode from our anonymous storyteller.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that you brought up that she is anonymous, this particular story sharer. Wanted to be kept anonymous, and I wanted Alaa you to know that that is an option for anybody that has a story but may not want to be tied to it for whatever reason. We respect that and we honor that. And if you just want to lend your voice in telling your story, we appreciate it. And if you just want to lend your story, we appreciate that too. I think she's actually the only story that we've gotten so far of somebody that's telling stories that didn't necessarily happen to them. And so it's nice to see, you know, like it speaks toward that oral tradition that is so ingrained in the Caribbean region where, you know, like you said, it's sitting around a campfire and it's telling these stories that have been passed down from generation to generation. And I feel like this particular string of stories speaks toward that. And then I like how at the end, it's her own personal story.
This is such a familiar concept for the youth or just Caribbean people in general, or even non-Caribbean people. You hear these urban legends and lore told from your granny or your auntie or your mom or your dad. And I'm really excited for this one because she covers a lot. So we're going to dive right into it. I kind of want to talk about the first story she mentions with her mother and her friend Susie and her name being called by this mysterious yet familiar voice.
So what I find interesting is that the way that the story kind of happens is that she hears the voice in the bush, and right as she's about to enter, thank God, her mother steps in and is like, what are you doing? Where are you going? Susie done make it home and done call to sit out her mother drawing the bath water for her. And so I think that that adds a layer of like mystery to the story. And I think a lot of us could relate to hearing our name being called. And the old people, I'm saying, you know, like, you don't answer to when you hear your name called once. You have to wait 2 and 3 times and then you go and answer, you know. And so it was very much reminiscent of that. And like I said, like, I myself have experienced that where I hear like somebody's calling my name and not quite knowing who it would be. Not in the way that the situation with Susie happened. But I feel like the interesting part of what this story kind of gave to was that I feel like it was a little, it wasn't aggressive in its voice, but it was aggressive in its tact. Like, it was relentless. Like, come into the bush, come into the, like, I ain't never had that happen. I've just heard the, you know, the echo of Gabby.
Like a little trickster. Kind of tricky little, like. So I kind of researched a little bit and I found a few theories. Some people have the capability to hear their angels or higher self or higher beings audibly. So that's one theory that these voices could be, because there have been reports of people that have heard their name being called, but it seemed a little bit more angelic than like this tantalizing little come into the bush, you know? So I don't think that quite fits the bill. So some other theories are a bit more psychological, like extreme lack of sleep, where you're kind of delirious and in this in and out dreamlike state, and you start seeing things and hearing things, and you hear about like some people that do that on purpose to try to receive a message from source or universe, is they will avoid sleeping. So they would purposely kind of trip. And then, of course, there's also extreme hunger as well, PTSD, extreme stress that can cause hallucinations and auditory hallucinations. And then something I never knew to consider, doing so much research on Reddit, I come across people when I look for stories and hauntings and stuff like that, I come across people that are like, hey, have you had your house inspected? Because that could be carbon monoxide poisoning. That's like a symptom of, you know, that poisoning is that you start to hear things and see things. And then also there is, of course, certain drugs that can cause hallucinations and auditory hallucinations. But again, this is a little girl. She's outside playing. So this kind of X's out a lot of those possibilities. But I always like to like look at every single option possible with our stories and play skeptic sometimes. But yeah, this, it just doesn't really explain her situation and this one-off situation.
You know, I feel like certain drugs kind of like, and then we could go back to the story, but I feel like certain drugs take away some of the inhibition that we experience in our day-to-day life. You know, like we have these blocks up where it's just like we don't access certain abilities or whatever. And it's kind of like when you're dreaming, you tend to be able to like, you know, fly mm-hmm. and go to other realms and talk to dead people. But in your waking life, that's not necessarily an experience that most people tend to have. And so I'd like to think that there are certain drugs that tend to mm-hmm. remove some of the self-imposed boundary and barrier that we put into our everyday life and bring those forward. Yeah.
So let's bring it back around to this voice. And I know that you had a couple of things to talk about, some input.
Yeah, I mean, just based off of the fact that she was a child, you know, I think Mama was probably eating very well in her Caribbean household, because I know you couldn't leave your plate not empty. Yeah, so when she was telling her story, what came to my mind was there's this entity called the Duen. In Hispanic cultures, it's called the Duende, and more in other parts of the Caribbean, like Trinidad and Tobago, it is called the Duen. The Duen are said to be the souls of the children that were born but were never baptized. And so they come back, they're kind of stuck in this limbo phase as spirits, and they tend to present with like huge sombrero looking hats, or like these old looking straw hats that kind of cover their face, because their face is void of any facial features and their feet are turned backward, which is a common quality that a lot of Caribbean entities actually have. And so basically they prey on children, and they tend to be, you know, a little bit like, if you're familiar with the concept of elves, they kind of give like an elfish vibe, where this, or what I'm saying is that a show up during St. Patrick's Day, leprechauns. It's kind of like a leprechaun vibe, where they're like tricksters. They'll sneak into your house, your key's missing, it's the Duen that took it. You know, something breaks in the middle of the night, maybe a vase falls off of a countertop, it's the Duen. But in this particular case, sometimes the Duen are known to specifically prey on children, and they'll call their name to lure them into the forest with the intention of getting these children lost. And so when I was listening to her story, it felt very much synonymous with what I had known about the Duen. And they're able to like change the pitch of their voice to match somebody's voice that you're familiar with. And so that's kind of, that's a little bit of the trickery that they use to lure children into the bush.
So let's go into her second story, which was also her mother's story as well.
I feel like as the stories go, they get even more and more like suspenseful. We have the same character again from the first story, and she's having this experience where she's home, you know, it was just raining outside, she's by herself, and she starts hearing almost like movement happening on the veranda outside. So what do you think about that?
So I love this story so much, because these are some of the stories that we grew up with as children, but never really heard a real account. So when she mentioned one hoof print and one human footprint, I was like, oh yes, we're going into Cowfoot Woman. So for those who don't know, me and Gabrielle are from St. Thomas, and one of our local legends is the infamous Cowfoot Woman, or on St. Croix, known as Goatfoot Woman. And in Trinidad and Tobago and Grenada, where this story is taking place, she's known as La Diables or La Diables. She's very famous in the Caribbean. So when I started researching this subject, I was always so curious, where did Cowfoot Woman start from? But when I type in Cowfoot Woman, there's not much. But when I type in La Diables, I get a plethora of information. So the first publication where we hear about La Diablesse, La Diablesse, she's first written about around the 1880s by a famous 19th century traveler by the name of Lafcadio Hearn. He spent 2 years in the West Indies, specifically on the Trinidad and Tobago, and also on the island of Martinique, where this story is said to originate from. She's taken from French, Creole, and West African influence. And mind you, he did not come up with the story of La Diablesse, but he had taken in the culture of the island from living there for 2 years that he decided to write about it. And they published it in Harper's Magazine, early 1900s. So he described her as a seductress, temptress, devil woman, as she's dressed in traditional West, like French Antilles garb. So she's got the peasant top, this big white hat that covers half her face, and the flowing skirt, a hoof on one leg, and then half of her face is a bit disfigured. And that's kind of where I see the first history of her, is this publication.
Yeah, so it seems like a lot of her, the way that she's described, has continued to kind of stay the same as it relates to the way that she is remembered in like Trinidad and Tobago, Martinique, Grenada. So she's an overall like beautiful woman. She looks young. And there are some variations between this version of the story and the ones that you find in like St. Thomas, mm-hmm. St. Croix. And what's interesting is that on these other islands, she preys on men. And so she tends to be able to capture the interest of men. And she have a good up body. So they follow her and with the intentions of like, you know, hopefully having some fun. And then she ends up, you know, basically killing them and leaving them for dead and then moving on to the next. Whereas in the Virgin Islands, she fixates on children. But, you know, us in the Virgin Islands have a whole backstory. Whereas in my research about her in the Windward Islands, I don't know that anyone knows where her originations are. Like, I don't know that there is a backstory behind, like, why she became how she is, or, you know, when did she first appear, and, like, what did that look like? But in the Virgin Islands, Cowfoot Woman she's kind of described as, like, a old hag kind of vibe. Like, she's old. She is not as beautiful as, you know, like, she's described in other parts of the Caribbean. And like I said, she preys on children, and the backstory is that she was working in some kind of like butcher shop or some kind of meat packing plant. And there was some thing that happened, that an accident of sorts that caused her to lose one of her legs. In response to that, they sewed on a cow hoof and she was able to maintain mobility, but then children would make fun of her. And so she grew this disdain for the children because, you know, the children were mean. And so she prides herself on getting the children back by, you know, meeting them in the shortcuts that they might take instead of going the long way home, or coming out in the nighttime and looking for children who should be in the house, but instead are gallivanting in the streets, ramageying, as you'd say in the French community. I don't know what the story is, the backstory for the Goatfoot version in St. Croix, and maybe later on we could have a Crucian on to give us the backstory, if there is one. But in this particular story, where she is referred to as like La Diablesse, it makes sense to me that she wouldn't bother this child that's home alone, because that's not her target audience. Mm-hmm. Mama was looking for the man them. She wasn't looking for a child. And so she was sheltering herself from the storm, and then she was on to, you know, her regular dealings. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting how her mother kind of ends the story and is just like, well, if you don't bother her, she don't bother you. And that tends to be like a reoccurring theme in the way that children are brought up in the Caribbean and how they navigate relationships with the spirit world, is if you ignore it, like the voice thing, you ignore the voice and it'll leave you alone. You know, like you don't bother her and she'll leave you alone. And so we see this thing happening where it's basically like, don't acknowledge it. Mind your business. Mm-hmm. And it will leave you alone. So I think that that's a very interesting parallel that's happening there in these stories.
I love how her mother was so nonchalant about it. She's like, oh yeah, that's just legend. Yes. But the real, like, banger of the story, I guess, is when she opened the door and saw the footprints too.
Yeah.
So this brings us to our last story that she told, that our storyteller told. And it's a personal story. Oh, yeah. And it's a good one too.
This one had me on the edge of my seat. This one had my heart palpitating. Like, the first two stories was like a little taste. Mm-hmm. But it's the last story. I was just like, oh, wow, this one has the heart racing.
You could hear it in her voice. Just, she's like reliving this experience. And this story is the reason why she wanted to remain anonymous in the first place, because she's still kind of bent out of shape about it, as anybody would. That would just imagine yourself being a child and sneaking out to get water or go pee in the night. And this is what you see. You see this black mass wavering around. And her grandmother or mother proceeds to tell her that that is a Jumbi. And so we're going to dive into that, because Jumbi, I feel like, is a very broad term for Caribbean spirits, Caribbean entities. And personally, the way I grew up, we never really heard what it looked like. But now growing up, I'm realizing there were different types of Jumbis from all different types of islands. But the Jumbis that I grew up hearing about were known as tricksters, and they were known to kind of occupy sacred grounds, especially where a lot of bad, dark history happened, like sugar plantations or buried treasure. They would be protectors of certain grounds. Again, like little tricksters. Something happened to your boat if you're ashore. Like, this happened to me at Santa Maria one time. I was on a boat there, and then we came across these old ruins. We found Jumbi seeds. Then our boat just floated away. We ran out of gas. We had to swim after it. Like, a whole plethora domino effect of bad juju just started happening to us. And I was like, that's because we were on walking around on those grounds we weren't supposed to be on, you know, like. But I'm going to let you take over, Gabrielle, because I know that you kind of looked into this subject a bit.
Yeah. So as you said, Jumbi is a very broad term. So a Jumbi could describe anything from like a ghost or any kind of supernatural being. The usual perception that I've come across is people tend to kind of blanket Jumbis as like negative forces, but in fact Jumbis are not inherently just negative forces. They run the gamut on, you know, all kind of different things. So the term Jumbi comes from African spirituality. I try to hone in on the region of Africa that it originates from, and I couldn't. I saw varying information, and so I don't want to central it down into a specific part of Africa and then, you know, like lead people down the wrong path. But what I saw was that it originates from West Africa specifically. So so Jumbis, like you said, I didn't really have any growing up. Like, I didn't really know what they look like. But one thing that I did know as a child growing up is that they were tall. They were always explained to be these very tall beings. And like you said, like, they were very much engaged in like trickery. And so we have this belief system in the Caribbean, and I feel like it's pretty broad as well. Like, I've seen other people from other cultures acknowledge this, but basically the idea is that people who have been evil in their life are destined to be instruments for evil in their afterlife. And so Jumbis are instruments of evil. They come forward. In most perceptions that see them as negative entities, they come forward and they tend to do like little things. Like, again, your car keys go missing, you know, like your hair and a voice in the night, your TV flicker on and off, to more bigger calamities, like your house burned down. I have heard numerous stories of houses burning down for no reason on both St. Thomas and St. Croix. I actually spoke to a girl recently who has a very interesting story of a house that caught on fire on St. Croix decades ago, and no matter how the fire trucks tried to put out the fire, it continued to blaze, and it never spread on any of the other houses. It stayed central on that house. And there was a belief that the house had this negative you know, energy attached to it for whatever was happening in the house or had happened in the house. And so it was the Jumbies them that would light the house afire and keep it ablaze. And so, and I've heard a similar story on St. Thomas, and basically Jumbies run the gamut, you know, like your grandfather visiting you in the night and he just coming to say, I love you, Jumbie. And then more bigger things like 6-foot spider in your bedroom, Jumbie, you know, like it ranges. What I thought interesting about this particular person's story is she sees this entity in the middle of the night, which is very much in line with how you know Jumbies present themselves. And she, just in the way that she tells the story, you kind of can get the overall visual of it, you know, like she doesn't explicitly say it, but you almost feel like there, you can feel energetically like something is wrong. And I think it speaks a lot to us as humans and our ability to pinpoint, like, this is danger. Like, you know, even before danger comes afoot, like, I feel like she had already came to the understanding that, like, something isn't right before she even saw this entity.
Maybe this Jumbie was just hungry, wanted a little midnight snack. But, yeah, it fell in line with your idea of the Jumbie being tall, because this Jumbie too was super tall and had red beady eyes. And it also falls in line with, I don't know if you ever heard of, it's an umbrella term for these type of entities, but shadow people that many people have seen across the United States, all different cultures. They kind of have a general term of these entities. They believe that they weren't humans ever. They come from some other realm and present themselves as these super dark, pitch black shapes, aka shadow people.
Check us episode 9 so you can hear about my personal story with the shadow person.
Yes.
Or my own Jumbie story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then what I thought was interesting and very much in connection with, again, you grew up in the Caribbean, things you've heard, is she talks about how after she does come forward and tell her grandmother, like, granny, like, something is up with a house in the middle of the night. And her grandmother is like, no problem. And she prays and, you know, like, she does the salt thing. And so, you know, like, salt is something that's very much connected to spirituality in the Caribbean region. It is used for energetic cleansing. It's used for energetic protection. You put it in the doorway, in the threshold of the door and at the windowsill, and, you know, whatever entity, the Skunya or the Jumbie, boundaries, will show up. Yeah, yeah. And they count the pieces of salt. And so it's definitely very much connected with the culture that's here. And I think that it's stood the test of time in the in the oral storytelling, because it works. You know, like, I know I have used salt in my home when I have been having, like, funky dreams or just these weird feelings. And the salt works to a T. So I think that what, you know, when you look at these oral tradition stories and you see the things that have lasted in the storytelling for decades or even centuries, is just kind of like, well,
yeah,
it's lasted because it works.
And salt is also, I mean, you also hear it in other cultures too, in all four walks of spirituality. They create boundaries, circles with this. Some people surround their house with salt as like a wall, you know, energetic wall. I've also heard and used like onion, cut a piece of onion and put it in the corner of your room to absorb the negative energy.
I really think that it was good that this was our first episode. This was one of the last stories that we recorded, but it became one of our first, it became the first episode because it held so much cultural significance. And that is exactly what we have set out to do here in these stories and in this podcast. So I'm very, very happy and grateful that this person came forward and decided, even through the, you know, layer of anonymity, to share this with us.
But yes, I love this story. And this is the reason why me and Gabrielle picked this story in particular as episode 1, because it was fitting for the theme of Caribbean mystics and our future episodes, which may or may not contain more Jumbies and Cowfoot women. And
all the things.
And also, yes. And we want to hear more of that. So if anybody had a real encounter or know of a family member that has a story behind some of these local lores, please share it with us.
And we're always open. Even if you just want to email us your story, but you don't want it aired, we appreciate the stories. It gives us inspiration to keep going forward. And we're so grateful again for all of you who decided to come on this wild roller coaster ride for this very first episode. We hope you'll come back again, share this episode with your friends and family. Subscribe, review, please. We need 5 stars so we can keep this going.
Mm-hmm. We are brand new, so we really appreciate your ratings and your feedback and your support. So, any last words?
Don't listen to the voices calling your name in the bush.
And walk backwards when you
enter into your home. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Caribbean Mystics Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share with your family and friends. Like, follow, and subscribe to keep up with all of our spooky Caribbean content.
Do you have a story you'd like to share that took place in the Caribbean? Email us at CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. That's CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. Or check the show notes for more info.
Caribbean Mystics is created and hosted by Paulina Creaky and Gabrielle Carrard. Theme song is Folktale Juve Rhythm by Umi Marcano.